Hello, and welcome to Improvised Parenting with Lori Wagner-Storley. That's me. Today I'm talking with Paul Valancourt. Paul Valancourt was kind of primarily responsible for bringing the Improv Olympic Theater from Chicago to Los Angeles. And he was my teacher at one point and my coach at one point. And seriously, he is one of the most informed people in improv today. So, hey, Paul, can you tell everybody out there a little bit more about yourself?
Sure. I am Paul Valancourt. I am what I always tell people is I'm a professional creative, which means I get to do a lot of creative things for a living. I've been an improviser and an improv teacher for about 30 years. I started when I was in college at the University of Maryland. I just actually over the weekend had our 35th reunion or sort of anniversary of the group, and I got to hang out with a bunch of my old friends from the old days on Zoom. That was super fun. I got to study at Second City in Chicago and IO in Chicago years ago, and then came out here and started the IO West out here in LA. And then when that closed, I started the Revolution Theater, ran that for about a year, and then I decided to close that down and sort of pursue some other things. And so I'm also like an editor and a filmmaker, and I'm studying to be a UX designer. And I mostly, I wrote this book about improv called The Triangle of the Scene. And I am the creator and host of this YouTube channel about improv called Improv Tips, with over 160 improv tips, totally free. Not only myself, but some of the best improvisers in the world giving a little bit of improv advice to those searching for it.
I love it. I love improv tips, and I check in there often. You know, I recently saw one by Bill Cott, who's going to be our guest, not next week, but the week after. So I'm excited. Great. Very excited. So Paul, you're a dad.
I am. Yeah. I have a 12-year-old daughter and a 10-year-old son.
Oh my gosh. How awesome. Tell me their names.
My daughter's name is Isabel, and my son's name is Paul.
My daughter's name is Isabella.
Oh my gosh. Crazy. So crazy.
Yeah, it is. So I am so beyond thrilled to have you on this podcast, because I would say first and foremost, you have the most knowledge of anybody I know about improv, and especially like because you continue to, you know, put it out there. And, you know, you started iOS, and that was a big part of my improv life. And you were my teacher and my coach. And I thought, wow, this is the best person to have on my show, because not only have I learned from him, but now I get to talk to you about, you know, what you're learning from your kiddos, you know, about parenting and how that's informed your parenting. I would want to know, yeah, tell me all about it.
It's been definitely a journey all the way along. I mean, I do really love improv, and whenever I teach a class, I always tell people, hey, the class is over, but feel free to hit me up and to talk about improv. I'll respond probably quicker than you think is appropriate for a person that has a couple kids. But I love it, and I love to be involved in it still. And I'm not certainly doing it as much as I was, even before COVID, probably not doing as much as I was, because I'm just trying to make some room for other people. And you know, it's just sort of the community's broadening out so much, which is really exciting. And COVID's been really interesting, because I've really gotten to connect with people from around the world, which has been really fun and really interesting to hear different takes on the work and what the community is thinking about now. Because I think that, I was thinking about this the other day, that a lot of times we sort of take our little time slice of when we were learning improv as this is improv.
Right.
But it keeps evolving. That conversation keeps going. And although we may take away this little piece of the conversation, that conversation keeps going. So if we want to be a conscientious member of the improv community, we sort of need to keep up with that conversation and keep engaging in that conversation, and at least sort of taking in, listening, you know, of what's going on, and taking in the new sort of more socially conscious, socially responsible viewpoints that when I was taking class wasn't part of the conversation. So it's a great education for me to have access to worldwide conversation about improv and learn and about, you know, what people are thinking about, and the way that the community is evolving, the way the art is evolving, the way the whole, you know, kit and caboodle of it is still evolving. That conversation is still going. And that's one of the things I really love about improv, is that you're never done.
Yeah.
As soon as you think you're done, you're done. You're yeah. dying. You're dying because you totally you just lights out. Because you know it's an ongoing evolving thing. I've been doing it for 30 years, and every time I think that I think I've seen it all now. Something totally new will happen. I'll be like, oh my gosh, that's so exciting. And then I'm back in it.
Right. Yeah. And I think that improv is something, like you said, that is organic and it will continue to grow. It's interesting that you say that because I've seen younger improvisers work today, you know, like out in the stratosphere. I don't get to go to shows anymore because I'm a mom, single mom at that. But I do miss it and I try to catch it whenever I can. And I can see there's a difference to it. There's, you know, a palpable difference, and it doesn't mean it's just different. And I'm in a different area, a different part of the country from where I learned it, you know, and I can see the difference in that respect too. So, I mean, it's different all around the world, I bet. I would love to have seen what you've seen.
Yeah, I think that it's also, honestly, from the time that we were doing it together, when we were involved together, mm-hmm. I feel like there was still pretty close to the explosion, to the beginning of it. You know what I'm saying? Like for big theaters like UCB or IO to really blow up like that, the Groundlings, you know, the Groundlings been around for a long time too. And they had a really nice sort of steady rise, Second City as well, steady rise. But for these other bit in the community, like the sort of explosion indie teams and stuff, for all that to happen, around the time that we were doing it was really exciting. We were sort of close to the origin of it. And I think it's like music too. It's like when you're there, like the beginning of the scene, you see like, oh my gosh, it's like, boom, bam, bam, boom. Is it this? Is it that? Oh my gosh, this exponential growth. And then when it kind of starts to even out, then it's a little bit of it evolves into a different thing then, you know? And it's not as quite explosive growth. It sort of evens out a little bit. And there's like, now it becomes sort of a little bit more codified and that sort of the scene itself isn't evolving as much. People are still learning it and people are still expanding it, but not at the rate that it was. Although now it's expanding in a different way. The art form is expanding, sure, but also sort of our social responsibilities and our acknowledgement of that is expanding, exploding now, partly because of the COVID and people's, just a little quiet time to sit home and reflect about what are we doing? You know,
really get in touch and tap into that creativity. Really. I've seen that to such a high level. People are really, really getting tapped into their own creativity. See my dog bark too. So one thing I know that, that hasn't changed for me is just the way I have conversations with people, say, for example. So what we learn in improv is yes and, right? Mm-hmm. And so we learn how to keep the conversation going. And we know, and you know, we learn that saying no just shuts down a conversation. There's a way to say no that keeps it going. And it's what, you know, kind of the secret to improv, you know, like how do you say no? How do you say yes and to a no question, a question where the answer is no. And that's the same thing I think in parenting. How do you feel about that? Have there been situations with your kiddos where it's like, no, but yes, and you add yes and it?
Yeah, I think it's sort of the same thing with the conversation where one of the ways that that we keep conversations going or keep a scene going is that I make my partner the most important person on stage, that I'm focused on them. Right. So I think that when I'm in a conversation with someone, I'm terrible at small talk, but I do know how to focus on someone else. And so I try to get the best out of them. Like, what do you want? What are you interested in? What do you want to talk about? I'm very like, I just love learning and I'm so interested in people's story. So I want to hear, like, what do you have to say? And so sometimes we'll walk away and I've learned a ton about them and maybe they haven't learned as much about me just because I keep it so focused on them. But so how that relates to my kids is, I was thinking about this morning, knowing that we're going to talk today, is I just try to, when I'm with my kids, I just try to be present with them. Mm-hmm. And I know that one of the rookie mistakes that I still grapple with today is trying to sneak in work, sneak in stuff where we're supposed to be doing something together. And they sort of, their attention veers away for a second. And I'm like, I'll just sneak in this one email. And then they start talking to me and I'm like, and I get frustrated, but that's a frustration that I created. Right. Cause I'm not in the moment. I'm not in the scene with them. I'm trying to create like a side scene, right? And it's a lesson that I learn all the time. We have some puppies now and they need our attention. And so whenever I try to do the same thing, I'm like, why haven't I learned this yet? You know, you're trying to, I'll sneak in. No one will notice. I'll sneak in a little work. And I'm so much happier, universally, so much happier when I decide, you know what? I'm going to put all that work aside. I'll get to that later when I can really focus on it. And I'm going to really focus on this moment. I'm going to really focus on the kids or the puppies or whatever. And I feel like that's really sort of how I do it. And how do I get them to new choices or sort of say no while saying yes is I just want to find out, like, what is this about? Like, why are we fighting about this? What is the, you know, when I'm in my best self, I mean, this all sounds very, very placid, but it's like amongst explosions. But I think sort of when I'm in my best self, I try to understand, like, where are you coming from? Like, what is it that you really want? What is it really about? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, because it's rarely, as you know, just like an improv scene, it's not about making sandwiches. It's about this other thing. So I always try, I try to get to that other thing. Like, what is this really about? What are you really mad at? What are you, you know, what are you after?
It's not about the red bowl, you know? Yeah, that's what we, in parenting, we say it's not about the bowl. So like, especially in the early years when kids are like, you know, I can see it because I see the patterns, you know, like when, as a teacher, when you see, you know, new improvisers coming in and doing the same over and over again, it's like really obvious to you. And it's kind of the same thing with parenting, where, you know, you can watch it unfold and you know exactly what's going to happen. You don't want to interrupt the process, you know, but at the same time, you want to inform the parent that this is normal and this is what happens. And this is what's going on behind the scenes. This is what they're after. You know, sometimes kiddos just need a big old release, just like parents. We need to freak out every now and then. And they just need a safe place to do that. Like one of my parents, her kid would come in and he'd be angry and upset and wanting to fight, and she would engage with him. And I'm just like, give him a place that he can take that energy to safely. Just give him a room, some pillows, some place that he can just go and get that energy out safely. And he'll come out like, what's for dinner? You know what I mean? Like, that's just how kids are.
For sure. I think that's really true. And I think that as my kids get older and we can sort of articulate that idea to them more, I feel like sometimes I'll say, do you just need a minute? Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, I do. And then they can go in their room, they can have a minute and they can be whatever they need to be. And then they can come out. Well, and then we can talk it out, because, you know, it's sort of like, we don't always learn under fire. You know what I'm saying? We don't always learn under fire. Sometimes we learn best when it's like, I have a minute to go away and process it and come back. And that's, as an improv teacher, that's where we have to sort of draw the line, because you can give a million notes on a scene, but you want to give the notes that will be A, most impactful, and B, that students can sort of take away and process and come back in the next scene. Because you don't want to, when I was becoming a teacher and sort of learning all that facet of it, you can micromanage the scene to death. You just talk the energy out of it, you know? Yeah. And same thing, you just want to sort of give them the space to learn this thing or to process this thing or sort of like calm down on the most basic level, and then come back and then we can talk about it, you know? And especially during COVID, I feel like, you know, there's four of us in this house, it's not a gigantic house, and we're, you know, on top of each other all the time. And so we've had to find ways to be sort of alone together.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's important for kids to have their alone time. And there's a big fear, I think, in parents, like if our kids are alone, there's something wrong, or, you know, they have a problem with me. They don't want to be around me. And we question ourselves and our parenting a little too much because we don't have a manual. We didn't come in with a big old book that says, oh, when this happens, you do this, you know? Right. And that's why parent support is so valuable, I think, because we can normalize situations for parents. You know, I had one mom that was asking, my daughter's during a tantrum, she was two. Does she have ADHD or does she have autism? And I'm like, no, she's just two. You know, like that's the flooding of emotion. You know, like I could sit here and break it down for you. Okay, the prefrontal cortex isn't developed yet. The brain is flooded with emotions and they need to get out of her body. That's it. Bottom line, easy, done. And, you know, what's for dinner? I mean, that's my favorite phrase is like they come out of it and they're like, let's go. So, and like, I want to touch on something that you said earlier about like that connected time. And parents, I think, are so in fear of that, like connected time. Believe it or not, I feel like there's a lot of parents that they don't know what to do with the connected time. And if you are, I think in improv, we learn to follow the person and, you know, we give space. That's that quiet space right before a scene starts, you know, where you're just kind of feeling, you're feeling the energy, you know, and that's what we want to give to our kids, that quiet space for them to direct. Child directed play is so important. They decide what we're doing. My kiddo straight up tells me, Mom, when are we going to get to do something I want to do? You know, we're always doing this and doing that and doing what you want to do. When do we get to do something I want to do? Hey, that's a good point. Let's pick a time in a day and do it. Right. You know, empower them.
Right, for sure. I think that it's a very basic thing that they all kids do. Like, hey, Mom, hey, Dad, watch this. They want their attention, like draw your attention to what I'm doing. And a lot of times I'm guilty of like, I have to put my phone down to do that. Right. And sometimes it's just like, they just want to sort of, hey, dad. And they just want to talk and tell me something, usually about Roblox, but they want to just tell me something. And then we're into that. And, you know, we try to, just try to find those things that they want to do that they're interested in and, you know, and follow them in that. Yeah. You know, because, and I'll say this, like as a parent of a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old, I think if people of 1, 2, 3, 4-year-olds could project forward in time and see how that connected time slips away.
Yes.
They would value it so much more.
Oh my gosh. We
never can. But it's like, I see my kids being more influenced or more connected to their friends. Mm-hmm. And like, they want to spend time like talking to the friends on Zoom rather than talking to me, let's say, or whatever, you know? So it's like, and it's a balance. Like they should have their friends. They should do that. And that's normal. But you know, you still miss it when it's, gone.
You sure do. And I think even forward projecting, you would still, knowing it, you still will miss it. I mean, there's always that kind of mourning of the loss of that's, you know, really concentrated time. It went so quickly and, you know, you were in it and learning at the same time. So it becomes really hard to hold on to because you're so like, you know, in it, learning, moving so quickly. You know, like I couldn't sit here and recite any of the scenes I did on stage at IO because I was in it and learning and doing. Like some of them that were really good and other people would be like, oh yeah, oh my God, when you did that, oh my God, you know, that I remember because then that gave me the reflective part, like what you were saying, that reflective.
Right, and that's like after the fact, like after in the moment, you're in the moment.
Yes.
And you're not, if you remember the scene too clearly, you're sort of like outside of it, looking at it, recording it, watching it, rather than in it where you're in that flow state, you're not really thinking about it. It's just flowing through you. You're flowing with it. You know, I think that's really, really true. And yeah, there isn't like a time where you like master a 2-year-old and then you can just enjoy that 2-year-old, you know, because they're evolving the whole time. Like every 6 months, I feel like there's something new. And it makes me think of this woman, Raj Thrans, who I just heard her say this the other day, I've really been sort of focusing on this idea is when we're teaching improv, we need to be students of our students. Right. And I feel like the same thing with parenting. I need to be a student of my kids. I need to learn who they are because they're not the same. And they're not the same as me and they're not the same as each other.
Right.
Right. So I need to constantly be in a state of learning. And this is how I feel about improv too. I'm constantly in a state of learning. I don't think that I've got it all figured out. I don't think that I know everything. I'm maybe a little bit further down the path than a student that I'm teaching. I'm just a little bit further down the path. I've done this maybe a few years more than you, and I can sort of point out some of the potholes you're about to jump into and say, hey, maybe you want to walk around that a little bit, right? But it's the same thing with kids. Like you can't live someone else's life. You just gotta be there with them and sort of, you know, meet them where they're at.
That's my favorite saying, Paul Valancourt, meet them where they're at, because
yes.
And you know, the thing is, I think too, is that this is something that's big in my parenting community that I talk to parents a lot about, is not only that we didn't come into this with a manual, but we came into this with a parenting style that we learned from our own parents, which is outdated. If you look at what we know now today, based on, you know, like how to parent children, brain function, brain development, all of this stuff, and how it applies to parenting, the way we were parented is completely outdated. And that's, I think, the learning curve for a lot of parents. So I'm in like a small town. And if I try to talk to parents around here, I'm a little bit crunchy because, I mean, like, they don't understand. Like if I say, you know, prefrontal cortex and brain development, they're like, no, he don't listen. He don't listen to me. You know, okay, well, there's, you know, there's a way to get your kid to listen, and that's to like really just connect with them. It's kind of simple in my mind. And then I'm going, how can I help this person get from A to, you know, to B, you know, because that's the only next step, A to B. It's not A to Z. We're going to B. We're not going to Z. Let's go here first. Meet them where they're at, parents and children, because, you know, they might have grown up in a neglectful household. And they don't have
kids. And our parents, I just feel like everyone's doing their best with what they got. Our parents got a flawed recollection of it from their parents, who got a flawed recollection of it from their parents, who got a flawed recollection of it. So it's all like flaws. But it's like incumbent upon us, as always, to reflect on our own experiences and see where are we coming up short, not blame our parents, but recognize where we are and what we got from them, good and bad, and to stand on the shoulders of those that came before, you know, and learn from those things. And just same thing with improv. Like, I feel like, you know, I see the improvisers that I love, and I sort of tried to take it to the next level of that, or to learn the lessons from them, to stand on their shoulders, to move the ball incrementally forward in the art form, you know?
Yes, I think absolutely. And that's the same with parenting. And I, you know, I talk to my daughter about it a lot, because I'm a big proponent of informing her. I don't just say because I said so. I kind of like explain to her. So, you know, the reason we're doing this is because, you know, you're learning a very important life skill, you know, and I'll kind of frame it for her, and she'll put that back to me, you know, and now I lost my train of thought, but I was like, it's so important, I think, for them to understand the process of why they're doing something. If they don't know why they're doing it, and this is in a recent blog post I did, if they don't know why, then they don't have a real intrinsic motivation to do something.
That's really true. I think that's so true. I think my parents really sort of got the most out of it, because I'm the mom, that's why, you know, like, and we try to not do that. And I'm like, oh man, that'd be pretty handy to have. But it doesn't teach. It's the same thing with improv. It's not like, it's the exact same thing, Laura. I'm so glad we're talking about this, because it's like, when I'm teaching someone improv, I'm not saying, hey, you should have said this, mm-hmm. or you should have said that. Mm-hmm. Cause then that's me just telling them what to do. Right. What I want to do is I want to go one layer back, one layer deeper, and I want to say, here's a direction it could have gone because of this underarching or under sort of pinning dynamic that will make your scene go better in the long run. Because I always tell newer teachers or newer coaches this idea that giving notes on this specific scene is a waste of time. Mm-hmm. You need to look at that scene and you need to see what bigger principles did they abide by that made it successful? Did they violate that made it struggle? Because you want to find what are the teachable moments in this that will apply to other scenes they're going to do in the future. They will never do this scene again. So saying that, oh, you know what, that crocodile should have been a cop instead of a fireman, or who cares? Like, we'll never do this scene again. But let's look at why you think that. What is the teachable lesson under that that they can apply to other scenes in the future? The broad dynamics, the tools that underpin that. And it's the same thing with your kids, because if they don't understand that, just like how if an improv student doesn't understand that, they can't apply in the future. If your kids don't understand why you want them to do something, they can't apply that themselves in the future. Because ultimately, my mom used to say, we're not raising for us, we're raising them for the world.
For the world.
Mm-hmm. They've got to go out into the world and they've got to know how to do it on their own, make their own best decisions, their own judgments of things, you know? So we need to teach them the method by which to do that.
Yes.
Not what decisions to make, but how to make decisions.
How to make, and the way I think we get to that learning process, like there's the soil and there's the shovel. And I think the shovel that digs the soil is what, based on what you said in what you just had commented on about telling them what they did right in the scene too, because kiddos need to know what they're doing right. When you start with, here's what you did right, but here's something that maybe you could have applied something differently, or this could have mm-hmm. happened in a different way, you know, without saying no, or you did it wrong. We say, here's what you did right first, you know, and acknowledging the positive parts of their development. Oh, wow. Look, you know, you cleaned up without me asking you. I'm so impressed. But we forget. I think parents in their day to day, they forget to do that. They only say, you didn't clean up that plate, you know?
Right. We definitely try to, and I think it's a struggle, because you're trying to, because you don't have to solve things that are solved.
Right, exactly. Right?
So a dirty dish is a problem to be solved. So you notice that so much easier than a clean dish that doesn't need to be solved. So, but I do think that we try to, I know that I'm very lucky that my wife is also an improviser. So we sort of have a little teamwork going on about it. And we try to praise too. And hey, I really appreciate that. You guys are really kicking butt. You're doing great and whatever. And thank you so much for doing this, whatever. We try to say thank you to each other and to our kids and, you know, model that behavior and stuff. And I think that's, I think that is really important. And we also try to have a growth mindset. Like we always tell our kids, like, if you tried your hardest and you got a B or a C, as long as you can tell me honestly, you tried your hardest, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
Like as someone who like came up through like really regular mainstream education, went to college and all that jazz, my thoughts about that have really changed. I was really sort of focused on that for a long time and I've really let go of a lot of that. And now I realize that it's not, doesn't really matter that much. Like it doesn't really matter as much as I used to think. And I used to be really set on the kids going to college. Now I'm like, yeah, maybe go or not. I don't, it doesn't really matter. Like you, if you find what you want and you want to be a baker, you don't need to go to college for that. Who cares? Like you do some baking stuff, find a baker and work with a baker. Like, you know, like this sort of thing. I'm much more sort of like open-minded about that now than I was. And I think part of it is that thing, that sort of like that thing of grades and that whole structure seems so real.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not. It's all artificial. It's all made up. It's like money. It's only the value that we assign to it.
Yes.
And when I realized that, then I felt I was much more able to engage with them. And a more realistic thing, like, did you try your hardest? Okay, great. Then let's go back and see what you didn't achieve and let's see why and can we solve that problem? And luckily my daughter's school especially is on a mastery system. So it's like, if you do poorly on a test, you get a 1 out of 4, you can go back and do those corrections and move it up to a 3.
See, that's brilliant. I mean, you got to give kids a chance to recover from maybe say a bad testing aptitude, because there is reality in that. Not everybody is a good tester. I'm an excellent tester. Just, I know how to test. I get A's on every test I take. Does it mean I retained everything that was in the test? Hell no. I'm just a good tester. I know. You know what I mean? And the same goes the opposite. Somebody could know everything about something and study their hardest, like my niece, and she does poorly on tests, hands down every time. She thinks she's dumb.
Right. And it's not, it's, you know, that old thing of like, if you, oh gosh, about teaching a fish to ride a bicycle or something, you know, it's like the fish is not going to think it's good, but if the only metric is like, how can you ride a bicycle? Like that's not going to work out, you know?
Right. The fish isn't good at riding a bicycle, but how can he swim? Right.
For sure. Right. It's just, it's like we have, it's again, it goes back to the biggest picture of meeting kids and people where they are. It's not it's not a factory.
Yeah.
You know, their kids aren't widgets and we just need to, and like improvisers and improv scenes, it's not widgets. That's one of the things that I really value about improv is that like everything is unique. Everything is different every time. And I feel like the same thing with kids. Every day is different. Mm-hmm. Who they were yesterday isn't who they are today. And, you know, you just have to be, when I'm at my best self and I'm in the moment with them and I'm really just listening to what they're saying, really, not what I thought they were going to say, what I feel like they're saying, what I want them to say, but what they're really saying, just like my scene partner, I'm really there. It's all gravy, man. It's all good stuff.
It is good stuff. And I know every parent struggles with that, because I know even in my parenting, I'm like, should I be doing something different here? I mean, am I being a parent? Like, is this parenting? You know, because it's easy to be a teacher and, you know, talk to other people about it and give them support. But when it's you, it's a whole different animal. When my kid's falling apart, everything else goes out the window because I'm right there with my own feelings. So I have skin in the game. It's totally different, you know?
For sure.
And, you know, and sometimes I think she's going to react a certain way about something and she does it. And I'm like, you know, it's like in a scene where, you know, you think it's going one direction because you're overthinking it. And then you're like, oh, wait. I have a hat. Okay. I'm wearing a hat.
Right. And that's like the Zen of it all. It's like, you have to be in that moment. Like the map isn't the territory, you know?
Yes.
Your plan isn't what it's going to be. Like it's, right. I always think of Mike Tyson, who famously said, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth, you know? So you just got to be there, man. Just got to be there in the moment with it as it's happening.
It's so true. And then give yourself a little bit of grace, parents. That's what I want to say, because that quiet time of not knowing is okay. And you can even say, I don't know what to say. I'm going to take a moment to think about it. I think your kid would be happy to hear that. I mean, honestly.
Right, for sure. I think that's really true. Because I think that it's because they, I think they have a sense of like when you're bullshitting a little bit, when you're making it up.
Yes. I mean, there's no better bullshit meter out there than your own kid, because I can tell you, they feel you not only on an intellectual level and a sensory level, they also feel you on an emotional level. Like, that's how they learned to connect with you initially when they first came into the world, is right. That emotional vibration that's coming off of you. So they know you better than you know yourselves, which is funny.
It's true, very true.
My daughter will check me on the regular on that. So terrifying. I love, yeah, it's, and it's again, like you said, we're learning in the moment. We're learning every single day. And we're not only learning about them, but we're learning about ourselves, which I think is
for sure. I mean, I will say with improv, my journey has been like an entertainment journey, but it's also been a spiritual journey. Every step of improv, every time my work evolves to the next thing, I've learned something about myself. It's like that old saying about goals. It's not about the goal. It's about the person you need to become to achieve that goal. And I feel like that's like bang, bang, bang. Every day is like, is that. And just trying to keep in the student's mindset, the beginner's mind, day to day of kids. And it's like, when I think back about, you know, my parents and how they seem like they had it all figured out. And now I'm like, oh, they didn't have any of this figured out. You know, it's like really, it's like when you see a teacher at the mall, you're like, what is going on? You know, but it's like, I think it's really important to just be that, to be who you really are, and to be open to like constantly learning lessons and constantly, you know, just doing that work of figuring out like, what is it that I, who am I? What am I, what do I believe? What am I passing on to my kids? And what do I, you know, when I yell, I apologize for yelling. When I get something wrong, I try to apologize for getting something wrong, in the sense that, because that's what who I want them to be, honest and not hide behind the power dynamic of parent child or whatever. You know, and so, you know, just trying to be honest, like that honesty.
Yes, everything you just said is super important, like the power dynamic. That I think we're trying, one of my favorite sayings is, take the power out of parenting and you'll struggle less, because there is no power in parenting, because the kid is intrinsically looking for control. They want to know what they control. So when we take the control away from them, they freak out. They feel out of control. It's a natural response. I feel out of control when I don't have control over a situation. Right. A lot of people felt out of control when coronavirus hit. It's how we respond when we don't have control. So when our kiddos feel out of control, they feel disempowered. The way we empower them is by saying, here's what you can do. Okay. I'm not going to let you do this right now, but here's what you can do. Like hitting, redirecting, all of that, you know, I see you're hitting. Maybe your body wants to do some hitting. Let's hit something safe, you know, or if a kid is freaking out, it's okay to freak out. Freaking out is a normal part of life. And like what you just said about being honest about who we are too. We all yell, everybody's freaked out on their kid. Okay. All of us. And if they haven't, gosh, I want to know more, because it's a part of the human, it's part of human behavior. So what the key to freaking what to do after you freak out is repair. I mean, like you said, I apologize and I say I'm not perfect and I'm only human, and this happens to all of us. I mean, it's not fair to a kid to just show them a happy, unaffected version of yourself, because that's not the truth. So you're not telling a kid the truth.
For sure. I absolutely agree with that. For sure.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the trickiest parts about parenting is that balance of not sort of micromanaging, controlling them, but at the same time, knowing that someone has a firm hand on the rudder, that like, we are in charge. I got you. Like, you're going to have food to eat, place to sleep, like, and there's certain boundaries that go with that. And there's certain things that are acceptable and not acceptable, and that they know that someone's in charge. There's someone at the helm. You know, but at the same time, not overdoing that so that you're sort of like, you know, not past helicopter, but smothering them. You're not smothering them, but at the same time, you're knowing that there's like a safe foundation for them.
That's right. Because I mean, that kids do need to feel safe. I think that's why they say Structure is super important when they're young, providing them that structure and showing them a healthy way to have boundaries and to, you know, showing them what their boundaries are. Because a lot of that, you know, temper tantrums in 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds really comes from, I don't know what I can and can't do. What are the boundaries, you know, here? So for us as parents, it behooves us to say, this is what you can and cannot do, setting proper limits for the kids. And then within that, they can thrive. You know,
for sure. I 100% agree with that. And that's always been our motto, is to set those boundaries and try to keep, you know, consistency of boundaries and stuff. And if they freak out, to just go with them and see where we're going to go and work it out. I just think about, it makes me think of like a couple times when my kids like freaked out in public and then some quote unquote helpful individuals like, we'll just give them a lollipop. That'll cheer them up. And I was like, no. No, it's like, you are, what's wrong? I'm not going to reward them for freaking out. You're nuts. Right. And it's not about the lollipop. It's about like, we need to figure out what's this all about? What's going on? Yeah. I think it's so presumptuous when people do that. It's happened to me a few times in my life. And I'm like, what in the world is happening here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Senior lane.
It's our culture. I think it's just the culture. And it still happens to this day when my daughter goes over to my mom's house and my mom will give her all the candy she wants, you know, and she goes, that's what grandmas do. And I'm kind of like, yes. And no.
Okay. That's tough for sure. I mean, family's always the trickiest part. Our kids go to my wife's mother's house and they have like, you know, a grand old time of it, but I think that they know strongly enough that it is a treat and it's not like a new normal.
Yeah.
And they may get to play more video games, but when they come home, guess what? We're back to our regular schedule and this kind of thing. I think as long as they start keeping in mind that it's like vacation. It's like a treat. It's not like we're going to do this all the time and all this kind of stuff. It's like, that's how we've dealt with it. Is that sort of awareness of like, this is a special time, a special thing. It's just for fun. And it's not like we're living at Disneyland.
Right, exactly. And there's, you know, one thing that I've learned along this process is I can't control other people. I can't force anybody to do anything. I can't force my child to do anything. So trying to have control over a situation that I do not, in fact, have control over is just a useless waste of energy, you know? So when my mom is doing that, I'm just kind of like, yeah. And I talk to my kid about it. Yeah, like you just said, it's a vacation. That's a really beautiful way to put it. Because when you come back home, this is the way we parent. This is the way our
house. 100%. And when she comes to our house, she has to live by our rules. We have to do it our way. You know what I'm saying? Like
on video games all the time, right?
Right. It's like when she comes to visit, she knows that she's coming into our dynamic of how it goes. And this is maybe that she brings them a treat or whatever, but it's not going to be like morning, noon, and night, treat, treat, treats, whatever. It's great because she's a great partner and she's very respectful of that and doesn't ever try to question it or test it. You know, she's very, she's a great third partner and a half, you know. It's been very great relationship with her.
It's really nice because I know some parents out there don't have that kind of support, that like third partner that you said. I mean, I for one, I know I had a really challenging relationship around my kiddo with my mother-in-law, and when I would share with her the way I wanted that I was parenting, she said, oh, you can do that, we're gonna do this, basically. It was like, you know, she might not be over as often. I mean, that's all right.
That's all you can do. But like you said, you can't control people. I tell my wife all the time when these different things come up, I'm like, I am out of the convincing people business. Mm-hmm. I'm out of that business. It's just not, when I was younger, I was all about it. I'm going to convince them. They'll see my way. It's right. Like, I'm out of that business. We have closed the doors. Yes. I'm on to something else now. Like here's how I do it. If you like that and you want to talk about that, let's talk about that. Same thing with improv. Like when I'm in a class and I'm like, I invite people the first day, just take the ride. And not all these exercises are going to work for you. Not all of them are going to resonate for you or teach you something. Just take the ride. And then when this is over, you say, screw you. And you take what you know, you say, screw you to me. And you take what works for you. I'm not saying you have to take everything. I mean, Bruce Lee said it the best, you know, take what's useful, reject what isn't, add what's specifically your own. Like, that's it. Like how are we going to go past Bruce Lee? Like, that's it. And that's right. Everything you need to know.
Yeah, that's right. He's the pinnacle, isn't he? Yeah.
Right? He was a great student of a lot of things.
Right. And at the end of the day, it's the process, not the product. Your kid is not a product, you know?
The process, Dave Rozalski says, and I think rightly so, the process is the product.
Yes. Yes.
In Dave Rozalski the process is the product. The way the audience comes to see us work it out. They don't want to see a finished thing. They want to see the dynamic of it being worked out. And it's the same thing with the kids. It's like the process is what it's all about. Like childhood isn't a set thing. It's an activity.
Yes. Dave Rozalski. Oh my God. He said that in his TEDx talk. Have you seen his TEDx?
I have. Absolutely. Oh.
Brilliant. I mean, I'm about to do a TEDx talk on improvised parenting. So I'm very excited. And, you know,
that's awesome.
I know I'm so excited to do it because I think it just really fits. I really, really have enjoyed talking to you, Paul. And I would love to, you know, invite you back anytime.
Sure.
If you were to leave us with one final, final thing, what would it be? One final bit of wisdom.
About kids? About being kids a parent?
Improvising and parenting combined.
I would say, just like in a good scene, it's the best when you're in the moment, fully engaged with your partner, and not planning, not forcing, not script writing. Just be in the moment and just let it be like one brick at a time. Just like in an improv scene, I bring one brick, they bring a brick. I bring a brick, they bring a brick. And it's that back and forth that really, I think, makes it happen.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Now, you tell our audience where they can find you and more about you.
Sure. If you're interested in finding more about improv, I would say check out P as in Paul, V as in Valancourt, PV Improv on YouTube. That's where the improv tips are. And if you want to check out some more of my stuff, you can always find me on Facebook at Paul Valancourt or PV Improv and on Instagram at What's Up with PV.
Love it. I adore you, Paul Valancourt. And anytime you want to come on this show and espouse your wisdom, I am open to it completely.
Thank Great. You. I'll see you tomorrow.
Okay. See you tomorrow. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.